found victory. We're back in Easterosi early on a November night, and I watch a young boy place marigolds on the base of an altar the community has built near the front of the gathering. It's a chilly night, but it's a respite from the heat I experienced when I visited in the summer.
This year we kept it a little bit more low-key. We thought we could just do, you know, more information, still do a remembrance, and just share bread and chocolate, hot chocolate, with the residents.
Janaki Anaga from the Community Water Center updates the residents on the recent win.
Muchos de ustedes saben que estamos aquí cerca a la ciudad de Orosi o el distrito de Orosi.
Many of you know that we are here close to the city of Orosi or the district of Orosi. And at the end of 2026, we're going to connect the pipes from here in East Orosi to Orosi.
De aquí de East Orosi a Orosi.
But this is not the end of the story for East Orosi. In the next episode, why is East Orosi's water solution taking so long, even with the proposed consolidation and available state funds? It's because Orosi and East Orosi are unincorporated towns, and their water is overseen by boards, or what's called a utility district. They're supposed to advocate for their communities, fight for clean water, make sure septic tanks get cleaned. But in a very counterintuitive way, this type of democratic local governance via utility districts has actually been a huge barrier to California implementing water equity.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Support for Trans Positive comes from KBOO members and RelationshipGardening.com. Specializing in support and repair for couples. Virtual for Oregon and California. Information at couplescoach@gmail.com.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah.
Hello, you are listening to KBOO Community Radio here on 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. And today we are talking with M. We're going to be talking today about what it's like growing up in Morocco, what it's like to be queer, to be an atheist, and some of M's hopes for perhaps moving to some place where there's a different set of opportunities. Em, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Hi.
Thanks. So, Em, you live in Morocco.
Yeah, I was born here, yeah. And I'm still living here.
Neat. And you're queer.
Yeah, I believe I have something called gender dysphoria. We don't learn about this kind of things in an Islamic country, so I only did my research when I started growing up to understand myself more. So yeah, I have a male's body, but my brain, my soul, my energy. I've always felt like I'm a female. I was born in the wrong body.
And you speak three languages. What are the languages that you speak?
The one that I believe that I am fluent in, of course, one would be Arabic. And there is a language called Tamil Nadu. It's like Dutch and Greek. And yeah, I believe that I also speak English very well. So
yeah, you're doing really good. Yeah. And thank also, you. Finally, you're an atheist.
Yeah, I am. I am. I stopped believing when I was 19. It was 2020, and I don't know. I feel like because I have depression, and I was depressed since the age of 12. I never put myself first. Because I feel what caused a lot of pain for me is that the absence of the acceptance of God was not there for someone who's queer or trans, or you know what I mean. So I've always been so afraid, so I never questioned. But around 2020, January, my mom has passed away, and in 2016, my grandma also passed away. They were only the people who loved me for me and accepted me, even though I didn't come out to them. But when I was 6, 7, my whole childhood, I was playing, dressing up, and I was making like dresses with my mom's scarves and wearing her high heels. And she never told me to stop, and my grandma also. And one time my mom said to me that my grandma told her, "I will never forgive you if you told him to stop playing the way he plays." In Morocco,
that's really special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And in Morocco, because you don't get to be raised just by your parents. Your whole family gets involved
They're all involved in raising you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sorry, I also have anxiety. I'm really sorry. So I had an aunt. She wasn't married at the time. She was so against what I was doing. And I remember one time I was playing and she looked at me like in a very disgusted way, and that really hurt my feelings. But as a child, I was a very happy child. I was bullied, and I wasn't accepted by a lot of my family members and by my surroundings. And because now I live in a bigger city in Morocco. I used to live in a very small city. So when everybody knows everybody, so it was very difficult.
It's easier to be someplace where maybe you're not quite as visible.
Yeah, for an example, where I live now, I don't get to see the same people every day, you know, so I don't get bullied as much as I did when I used to live in a place where everybody knows everybody. You meet
right.
The same people it's every like, day. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like living in a small town.
Yeah.
Or living in the neighborhood. Everybody knows what you're doing. And so everyone knows you're transgender. So I'm curious, what is it? I mean, is being transgender or being queer, is that acceptable in Morocco? Like, can people do people in Morocco have legal rights to be queer or transgender?
No, not at all. You can go. When I say I'm trans, I still present myself as a male because I cannot present myself as a female. When it comes to clothing and makeup or hair or and also when it comes to the law, you can go to prison if you are gay and you are caught doing like you are caught in the act. You're gonna be sentenced to like I believe 10 to 12 years to prison.
So yes. Everyone, so there's a heavy penalty for an open expression of being queer.
Sorry, but people, I didn't get that.
But many people we know that there's queer people everywhere. I mean, you live in Morocco and there's probably lots of other queer people in Morocco. What do people do in your country? I mean, does everyone just have to keep it in the closet? How do you deal with it?
That's pretty much it. So everybody's in the closet. And if you want to meet other gay people, there was an app called Grindr, but a trans female, she's in Turkey now, she exposed that app, and after she exposed it, people who are thieves, they started to make accounts, and when you're going to meet them, you're gonna be robbed. And but the other thing, we have Facebook, so I've met a lot of queer people through Facebook, gay people, but you know, most of them are they believe in God, and they believe there is something wrong with them. And because when I used to go out with them, I feel more hurt by them more than like straight people, because in my mind those are the people who are supposed to accept me for who I am, but they were also judging me for being feminine. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I didn't have a good experience with queer people here in Morocco.
Right. It's complicated, right? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. on the one hand, you might meet people who are queer, but they might look down on you for being trans. Or you mm-hmm. might meet people who are queer, but they're also devout, and you're not. So there's mm-hmm. Just because somebody's queer doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be your ally, right?
That's so true. Yes.
Yeah, and if you're living someplace where the consequences are prison, it's even more challenging because you have to be very limited in anything that you say about yourself, right?
Yeah. Even expressing yourself in social media, or you can be put in prison. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like when it comes to social media, it's mine. I have a right to say and to express myself, but you cannot do that. And I have even now it. My problem is I'm past being like scared, annoyed or anxious about being trans or queer. It's also being an atheist around like majority of people here are Muslims, and that's what's really like putting me in a very dark place, because I feel like my whole life, I felt like there is something wrong with me. Even though as I said, as a child, I was a happy child. Because, you know, you're a kid. I didn't get depressed or when I was a child until I was 12 years old. When I started secondary school, you know, you become a teenager And here in Morocco, we don't have like secular, especially the city that I used to live in. We don't have like secular schools. So we have like this thing called Islamic education, where we read the Quran, we study about it, we study about the Sunnah, which everything the Prophet said. So when I was in secondary school, it was getting more graphic. It began like the hate speech against queer or trans or atheists or Jews or Christians was getting more graphic. So I had it the worst when I was since the age of 12 until now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my dad is an alcoholic, and he was very abusive to me and my siblings, physically, mentally. Now I live with him, and he cannot assault me physically because I'm stronger than him now. But mm-hmm. still, the mental like torture, it's still there. Because mm-hmm. imagine living with someone who's supposed to, he's, you know, my father, my dad, he's the one who's supposed to protect me from the whole entire world, like my mom did. But he was one of my bullies. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah, I only left the house for school, and I didn't even want to go to school. I always got like A's, and I was a very good student. I had really big plans for my future, but when I was in high school, I had to drop out because of the bullying, and also because of my mom got cancer. She died because of cancer. So yeah, they really destroyed my life. I mean, imagine going everywhere and getting bullied. I remember one time I was in fifth grade. I got hit by a big rock. I still have like the scar on my head, and it was terrible. Yeah, and when I think about it, I feel like, I am a strong person. I didn't commit suicide. I still have hope. I know who I am, and yeah, I keep fighting every day. It just gets exhausted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm exhausted physically. I'm in a lot of pain. I don't go to like therapy. I have a psychologist. I do take medications, but they only can do much, if you know what I mean. So,
mm-hmm. Does your therapist know that you're transgender?
Yeah, I told him that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also told him I'm an atheist.
Uh huh. Does your therapist support you in who you are?
Because I made sure to let him know who I am, and this is who I am, and I know who I am, so he had to accept it. It's not in his, it wasn't by his will. Because he would love for me to go to him and say, no, I was wrong. Now I would love to thank you so much because you turned me to the right way. I'm a male and I believe in God and all that, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, that will never happen. So, he had to accept it. So, and I told him, now I know who I am. The only thing that you can help me with is just to give me medication so I can, like, function a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have... Sorry.
No, sorry, go ahead.
It's just because I have severe depression, anxiety, I have PTSD, I have ADHD, I have I also have OCD. So with gender dysphoria, and also when I remember I hated the way that I looked, because I didn't feel ugly. I felt like I looked like a girl, and that's not okay. And when it comes to your physical appearance, you didn't get to choose to be born the way that's, you know, I didn't choose my looks. So people were always telling me, oh, you look like a girl, you look like a girl, you look like a girl. So I just started to hate the way that I look when I was a Muslim. But when I started believing, because it was for so many years, I also believe I have body dysmorphia now. So yeah, that's going from, you know, loving yourself to hating everything about yourself. It's kind of sad.
Do you remember when you started going from loving your body to hating your body?
When I was 17, when it was my first time going to therapy, when I started taking medication, my hair started to fall off. My hair was turning white, and I also, sorry to say this, I hate my private parts. I really hate them. And also I wouldn't say I hate my face. It's just when I see that when I look in the mirror, I don't recognize myself anymore. And even as a child, I didn't know the word transgender, what it means or something like that. But when I looked in the mirror, I used to see like this beautiful little girl.
And you said that your mother and your grandmother were both very supportive of you and your gender expression as a child. So they understood that, you know, something about you was, I mean, they just supported you in however you chose to express yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, they even though they are not like educated. They were, because I was like a very bubbly child. I used to wear like dresses and scarves and something, and all these things, and I used to do plays, and I was making them laugh. I was hilarious to them, so they really loved my what I was doing, so they didn't have a problem with it. My aunt did. She was always like, no, this is wrong, I'm scared he's gonna grow up to be gay or trans. And she was against it, and that really broke my heart at that time. I wasn't depressed about it, it just, I didn't have the whole freedom to play as I like.
Why do you think, I mean, is there anything, I'm not as familiar with Islam as I should be, I'm trying to learn more about Islam, but is there anything specifically in Islam that prohibits? Like, I mean, I've heard that in Iran, for instance, I've heard in Iran that it's actually permitted to be transgender, and that Iran actually helps to support people who want to transition. But they have a prohibition, a strong prohibition in Iran against being gay. So apparently you can be transgender in Iran under the current regime, you know, which has been around for about 40 years, but you can't be gay. And I mean, but is there,
Sorry.
I'm just curious because, I mean, I would have assumed that Morocco was one of those states that was more westernized. I mean, there was a time like about, this is kind of before your time, I'm probably a lot older than you, but there was a time I remember when I was a kid, when like, for instance, when Iran was much more liberal, and also countries like Syria, Lebanon, they were a little bit more westernized. And then when the Ayatollah Khomeini came in 1980 in the Islamic Revolution, it became very, very conservative, very orthodox. And I've kind of seen Turkey going the same way, going both ways. Like, I don't know what it's like to be queer in Turkey. Like, I probably should have invited a guest on the show who is queer and also Muslim from where I live, because they would be better at having this conversation with you. But I'm just wondering, like, I mean, I assume Morocco was more westernized, but I guess from what you're describing, it sounds more like Algeria almost.
I mean, when it comes to more, I don't know if you heard about Berber people. They now mm-hmm. we don't say Berbers because it's offensive. We say Amazigh. That's the language that I speak. It's called Amazigh. My mom is I will say Berber for people to understand. So they were very, very, very okay with a man marrying another man or someone being trans. And they are originally from Italy. So, I mean, they were a very open-minded people. But when the Islamic, groups of Muslims were like spreading all around the world to spread Islam, they killed a lot of Berbers, so they took over also. We had like in Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia, and I also believe Libya or something like that. They were all, they were most of the people, all the people who were there, they were Berbers, so it was a very, they were very educated, smart, accepting people, you know, because mm-hmm. they celebrated gay marriage and trans people and all of that. But when a lot of Muslims attacks to take those lands, they killed the leader and they just took over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also, I've read maybe, I don't know if that's accurate or not, in Iran, they also like, they are giving gay people their rights now. And when I was seeing the comments, Moroccan people were commenting, oh, Islam is, we're losing our religion. What is this? This is not acceptable. And they were going crazy over that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to me personally, sorry.
No, please, this is for you. Go ahead.
To me personally, if the law supported people like me, I would not really care that much what society says about me or they view me, because I will have like a higher power on me protecting me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't really care about people's acceptance or opinions, because they have the right to their opinion, even though it's ignorance, it's hurtful, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think they are not going to be able to harm me physically. But when the law and the society is against you, you have, as I told you, I don't leave my house unless I have to.
mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
What about Kif Kif? Is that...
Kif Kif, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did reach out to them for help, and they told me they don't help cases like mine.
What is Kif Kif?
I think if it's an organization that spreads maybe awareness that I don't know, maybe talking about human rights in general and Yeah, I think that's what they do. I thought that they help like people move, or I don't know, but I think I sent them a message on Instagram to their page, and they told me they don't like help people like me, so. Yeah.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with M. M lives in Morocco and is transgender and also an atheist. And we're just talking about M's experience growing up trans in an Islamic culture that really doesn't look positively on being trans. And I mean, to say that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone growing up in every Islamic culture experiences what you experience, because we know that there's a wide variety of how Islam is understood and how it's expressed around the world. But in your country, and also in many other countries, it's very, very difficult for people who are queer to live openly. You've told us earlier, Em, that there's a penalty of 10 to 12 years imprisonment if you're caught with another person. Like, so if you're in an act and it's considered an act that's unnatural, you could be sent to prison for 10 to 12 years, which is a really serious, that's causes a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. Yeah. And probably, do you ever feel suicidal, Em?
Just recently, just in the maybe in this, like, since the passing of my mom, but I never harmed myself, or it's just thoughts, because sometimes I feel like my chest is about to like, I'm in so much pain, sometimes I feel like I'm going to have an explosion in my chest. So sometimes I say that suicide will be like the ultimate peace to my existence. But I don't want to do that to myself. Mm-hmm. But I hope.
What would you like to do, Em? I mean, if you could... I mean, I'm sure that if you could, you would love to just wave a wand and change your environment so that everyone in your community and in your country was open-minded and accepting and tolerant. But if you can't just use magic to change your environment, what would you like to do? I mean, is there an opportunity for you to leave Morocco?
I imagine with all of this, as I said, I always had like great grades. It's great. When you go from like a level to a level, I was always passing with a good notes. Did I make sense?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You did good in school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did good, and until high school, when it was my second year, I had to drop out. But since then, I studied. I'm a medical assistant now. I don't have a job, but I studied that, and I'm studying in Dutch. But because of my ADHD and also me taking medications, I'm not doing great. I feel just I'm wasting my time. And I was working. I quit my job last month. I worked for like 38 days. I mean, I wanted to continue working. It just... the people who I was working for, they were really they were really mean and not professional at all. And imagine you have to wake up at 5 a.m. and I don't finish working until 6 p.m. And there is no time for you to rest. There is no rights. We didn't have like a contract. So if something happened to me when I was at work, there is no, I think, insurance or something to cover up for me. And also, I imagine working for, we didn't get paid until I worked 32 days, and I think it's $200 a month. So it's also working here in Morocco, it's a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Is that enough to live on? Is $200 a month enough to live on in Morocco?
No, not at all.
You're working 60 hours a week, and it wasn't enough to live on in your country.
I'm bad at math, but as I said, I was going from 5 a.m. in the morning, 6 a.m., sometimes 7 a.m., until 6 p.m.
You're working full-time plus 20 hours overtime. That's how we would call it in our country.
I only get one day off, and imagine you have to do chores that you don't have to do them, but because they were people who we were working for them, they were very cheap, even though they are very rich. So we were doing everything, and they were still complaining. And yeah, I did need the money, but my dignity is first for me. So I quit, and I'm looking for another job now. I hope I will get hired.
Is unemployment high in Morocco? Are there a lot of people unemployed?
Yeah, you will find people really, really educated, but you have to have like some power to get a job here in Morocco. So, and unfortunately, my dad is a doctor. He knows a lot of people, but he doesn't care about me. Because I never thought in my life that, first of all, that I will drop out of school. I will not leave the house. It wasn't my choice, Emma. I swear it wasn't, because being bullied everywhere where I go, be hidden by rocks, people calling me names in front of people, and I was humiliated. And I have PTSD, and with all of this, I don't care. I have a lot of energy. I want to work. I want to start my transition journey. I want to study more. I want, hopefully in the future, I want to be a nurse. And also, if I could teach people languages, that will be great for me. And I just have a lot of dreams. I want to do a lot of things, but
You'd like to be a nurse. You would like to teach languages, and you'd like to transition.
Yeah, that's one of my like three goals for now. Mm-hmm. I feel working and giving back to the universe is it keeps your spirit up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
I think you would be a great nurse. Just listening to you now, you're a great listener, and it sounds like you would be a really good nurse. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's why I love helping others, especially when my mom had cancer. I was her nurse, basically, me and my sister, and we were taking care of her. I showered her, I changed her diapers, I gave her her medications, I lifted her, I cried a lot of times in front of her. which now I feel bad, but I couldn't control my emotions there. But yeah, I loved her so much. She was amazing.
That's so nice.
She was not judgmental. So she was a very good person. Yeah. What's making my life really difficult now when it comes to learning is ADHD. And, you know, being in a lot of medications, you don't I sometimes force my brain to focus, but I just get this very, very bad headaches. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's not unusual for transgender people to also have, you know, overlapping diagnoses. I mean, that's not unusual. Some of that's trauma related. Some of it might be something else, you know. But I mean, transgender people experience a lot of trauma. I mean, you talked about getting hit by rocks as a kid. You know,
When I was in high school,
being in fear for your life, for your gender expression. Those are all really deep-seated sources of trauma. And the trauma still tries to find ways out of the body. You know, it comes out through these different kinds of expressions. That's not the only way that people have these conditions, but trauma definitely is part of it.
On top of that, I'm an atheist in an Islamic country. That's my life should be a movie.
Well, you're very special. Let's talk about your transition. If you could transition, would you like to? Do you have access to hormones in Morocco?
Of course, I would love to. As I said, I'm just trans, just with myself. I know what I want, who I am, and what I want to do in the future, but I don't go wearing like the clothes that I want to wear or having long hair. I want to wear makeup. I can't. When I say that I grew up a trans and I'm transgender, it's just a feeling. It's just how my brain is, but I cannot present my feminine energy to society because I will be, I don't know, I will be beaten up by them and I will be dead maybe. So I want to leave my country so bad. And when I just lay a foot in a secular country, I will start my transitioning, no doubt about that. I really, really, sorry to say this, I really hate my private area. I hate looking at it. I don't want it. It makes me sick.
So, if you were able to leave Morocco, where would you want to go? Would you like to go to another Muslim country that's more open-minded, or do you want to go to Europe? Would you like to go to the U.S., to Australia? Where would you like to go if you could leave your country?
An Islamic country. I would never even think about that. The only here in Morocco, if I had I believe it's $15,000, I would be able to leave to Europe, because with that money you can get a contract, so you can go for 3 or maybe 5 years to an European country. But to go to the United States, or not all European countries, just a few of them, but the United States and Australia and the UK, they are really difficult to get to from where I live. But there is some European countries that I can go if I had that money.
And if you went to Europe, you could take steps toward transitioning in the way that would feel natural to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just thinking about it makes me so happy.
My God. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I people criticize me when I say, oh my God, or in my language, just because it's in our language. I'm used to it.
Right.
I don't mean nothing by it. So yeah, transition. Yeah. If I get the first chance I will get to leave, I will start with my, of course, with my transition journey. And I think, I feel it will be so amazing.
I'm really excited for you, Adam. I mean, it sounds like you still have a lot of hope in spite of...
I do. I really do, yeah.
You're a survivor.
I share this, like, quality with my mom, because even she was a very strong person. She was very, like, nothing in life would beat her. When she gave birth, you know, females scream and hit, she didn't even scream once, because when my younger siblings were born, I got to see her, and also my aunt, when she told me that when we were also born, she didn't scream. It was like nothing to her. And also my whole family, females in family, when they get their period, they be in so much pain. Her period and that pain was nothing to her. And also cancer, she was doing her chemo and everything. It spread all over her body. That's the reason why it killed her. But it did nothing. She had like this strong spirit, and she was just in love with life. So I think I got that from her.
Well, yeah. That's fantastic. And
She was always telling me that you are very strong, don't worry, there is time ahead of you. But when it comes, because you know, I dropped out of school, and she didn't know those whole emotions and the things that I went through. And when she was with me the first time that I went to a therapist, and I told her I was being harassed, and I didn't tell her the full details, she cried, and she was telling me it's gonna be okay, I love you, and she was just amazing. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So a lot of your strength comes from your mother.
Yeah, actually from her.
And you'll always
I don't think she went through like the things that I went through. Mine a lot are a lot graphic, but it's just her love of life. I think that she raised us that way for us to also love life and to not stress, and everything is gonna be okay. And yeah, I feel like everything will be great in my life one day, hopefully. And I just want to say one thing. When I was a child, I don't know if you are familiar, but a movie called Shrek, there was a princess called Fiona. I remember when she was in the castle, and she was like stuck there, and her Prince Charming was gonna come and save her. She was laying in that bed holding flowers and waiting for him to kiss her so the spell can go out from her. I used to do the same exact thing. I was used to lay down and my Prince Charming is gonna come and kiss me. So I always wanted to be a princess.
That sounds great.
Now I'm dreaming about my wedding day. What dress I'm gonna wear, and Hopefully one day it will get married. Yeah.
Oh, the subversiveness of Disney propaganda. Yes. Disney. Yeah. You know, in the United States, well, I don't know if it's still like this. When I was much younger, like all the gay people, they loved to go to Disney World, you know, and they loved it because of those kind of stories. Like queer people love Disney and they really respected. And actually there was in the United States recently, the state of Florida was trying to make it much more difficult for queer people to have their rights. And they were going after Disney because they knew that Disney was so supportive of queer people. So it's nice that you shared that story. It's really nice. It sounds like the message got through anyways.
Yeah, also in my family members who live in Europe, they are saying that they are teaching our kids that it's okay to be transgender and blah, 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 blah. I told them this. If you don't like it there, what are you doing there? Come here, come to your land. I mean, you're not gonna change their whole like education system just for your kid to be transphobic or, you know what I mean? So if you are in a country, because they benefit from those countries when it comes to the education, when it comes to health, when everything is wonderful there, but they say, oh, they don't have no morals because they are accepting and they are secular, and I'm like, come back, don't live there.
No, it's so very possible. I mean, here, like, so right now I'm in Oregon, but I'm originally from the state of Minnesota, and in Minnesota, we just recently, they just reelected Ilhan Omar as representative. She's a Muslim woman. She's from Somalia, and she is a representative in the United States House. I mean, I don't know how devout she is. I mean, she wears a hijab. She doesn't wear a burqa, but she wears hijab in Congress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she represents her community. I mean, her community is Somali. And in the state where I'm from, Minnesota, we have a lot of Muslim, you know, a lot of Somalis have come. And it's very possible to live a life in a Western country. You know, I mean, if you want to be devout, if you want to practice your faith, it's very easy to do it in America, you know, but if you also want to live, there's lots of places in between. Like you could be a Muslim and you could be, you know, open-minded, like accepting that other people are different from you. And also be around other people and let them have their values that are different from yours.
They pretend to accept. This is my opinion. They pretend to accept people who are queer or trans, or because they have no choice. But in closed doors, they really talk like a lot of. I don't want to curse, but they say a lot of horrible things. I remember one time my cousin she came back from France to just a vacation here in Morocco. I was at her house. Imagine, I just woke up, I brush my teeth, I wash my face. I'm going downstairs to have breakfast while they are talking about, oh, the world is ending, there is trans people, there is gay people. Because it just in France recently, they have like someone in the government who is homosexual, he's married to another man. And they were just talking a lot of nonsense. And imagine, I just woke up and I just want to have breakfast in peace. Personally, I don't like to go to my family gatherings and all of that. I only go to see my sister, because my sister, even though she is a Muslim, she is against everything, because I feel one day, hopefully, she will become an atheist because she loves wearing makeup. She loves to express herself, to dress the way she wants. She doesn't want to wear the hijab. And she, no one forces her. It just people talk a lot of, you know. So I only go, because she doesn't live with me, I only go to see her, and I have to see my aunts and my cousins, and I spend a day or two with them, and I just go back straight to home, because all they talk about, I don't belong at all with them, not at all. Now they don't bully me as much as when I was a kid, because now they know I have like a very strong opinions, and I don't like to say it, but I feel I'm always kind of right when we have arguments. So they know that I'm a lot stronger mentally now than I was before, even though I don't feel like it, but I know now who I am, and I just don't care if someone hated me, or I mean, I can't be something else. I only can be myself, because imagine Emma, when the bullying got so vicious, I started, because I did theater, I made like this persona, this manly, like straight. I was pretending to be something that I am not. Even with all of that, I got bullied, because your nature kicks in and you are just who you are. You are born the way that you are. So, yeah, but I did like an A4. It was like 24/7, that persona. I had to act all day, every second, every minute of my life, because at home I had two brothers, dad, when I go to school, there's teachers, students. So I lived in, that's why when I told, when I look in the mirror, I don't recognize myself anymore. And it's very devastating to me.
I just, we'll have to, I'll have to have you on another time, and we'll have to have this conversation. Maybe I could invite someone on from my area who's an atheist, who's Muslim, and that would be a really good person.
I would love to. You just send me an email and I'll be on time, and I cannot thank you enough for this opportunity, because I have nobody to speak to, and you are doing an amazing thing, and I love you so much, and thank you so, so, so much. I really thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. We've been talking with M. M lives in Morocco. M is transgender, is an atheist. And M has been kind of sharing with us their life story. I never asked you what your pronouns were, M. Do you have any preferred pronouns?
I don't for now, but in the future, it's going to be she, her.
Okay, in the future. All right. Yeah. Well, we've been talking with M about their experiences of growing up as a queer and a transgender person in an Islamic society in Morocco. So it's really been great talking to you, Em, and good luck with your transition. I hope you're able to get out of there really soon. If you know, if anyone reaches out to me, I'll make sure to pass on that information to you.
Yeah, that will be lovely, and thank you for the opportunity, and take care. Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Em.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States. We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing forward discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
Tune to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and streaming on the web at kboo.com.